Did you know that board track racing was America's most popular spectator sport during the 1910s and 1920s? We'll discuss this and other interesting facts about the origins of auto racing with Marcy Lynn McGinnis on this episode of The Curious Professor. Everyone, I'm Dr. B. Welcome to the Curious Professor podcast, where I take listeners on a journey of discovery to explore the people, places, artifacts, and natural wonders that spark my curiosity. On this episode of the Curious Professor podcast, we'll explore the history of motorsports with writer and historian Marcy Lynn McGinnis. But first, a trivia question. What is a velodrome? I'll have the answer for you at the end of this episode. I'm thrilled to have Marcy Lynn McGinnis on the show today. Marcy is the world expert on the Uniontown Speedway board track due to 28 years of research for her books, Yesteryear at the Uniontown Speedway, Speedway Kings, and Laurel Highland Legends. Her books are collected by car guys and racing enthusiasts. This determined author graduated from the Screenwriting U Masterclass in 2019. There she wrote Speed King, a feature screenplay inspired by her books and the daredevils who made it possible for us to go from carriage to automobile as an everyday mode of transportation. In 2020, McGinnis was interviewed by Kirk Leedy and Associates for the board track documentary Dancing with the Devil, depicting America's 24 wooden speedways of the early 1900s. Throughout her career, McGinnis has written and published 40 books and owns the rights to several true stories. She has also produced multiple magazines and ghostwritten memoirs. Just weeks ago, she completed an adaptation co-written with a Canadian producer based on a popular BC book. Marcy is presently writing a true drama, Guilty of Self-Defense, and a comedy pilot, It's Your Funeral. When I found out about Marcy's expertise in the history of racing, my curiosity was immediately piqued and I wanted to learn more. I hope this interview with Marcy will spark your curiosity too. Welcome to the show, Marcy. It's great to have you here.
Thanks, Karen.
How did you become so knowledgeable about early auto racing?
Well, in the early 90s, I started a series of books called Yesteryear, and they were pictorial histories of the town that I lived in, which turned into a tourist town, etc. And after I put out several of these books, one of the old timers who had been donating some photographs, he was a collector, he called me, Jim Boyd. He was about 79 at the time and quite a character, but he called me one evening and said, "Meet me in my basement." And I said, "What?" "Meet me in my basement, please. I have something to show you." I'm like, "Okay." And I had a lot of these kinds of phone calls back then because so many people donated to this series of books, their old photographs, etc. Well, I met him in his basement and he was a collector. So, you know, there was only an aisle and just so many wonderful things in there. And he had his arms loaded with panoramic photographs and newspapers and framed photographs from this Uniontown Speedway board track, which I had never heard of, but had been built in 1916 nearby, and it was internationally famous. I had no clue about this, but he wouldn't show me what he had. I said, "Well, what?" He said, "You have to do something with this. It's important." And I said, "Well, what is it?" And he said, "Promise me." And I said, "Oh, okay." And so he laid it all out for me and handed me a carload of information. And I didn't know he had some health issues and he was afraid he was going to pass away without somebody doing this. So Jim Boyd, I dedicate everything I've done. I've written 3 books on the subject and now the screenplay that I've rewritten 20 times. But so Jim gave me all that stuff and this was in 1993. So it wasn't like the big internet craze where you could just start researching things online. So I had to go to the library and go through all the newspapers on the, the old machines. And it took me 2 years. I found a lot of old timers and I've been in so many garages, $1 million garages and falling down garages. And they both contain the same amount of valuable information. These fellas were so knowledgeable and so helpful to me that I put out Yesteryear at the Uniontown Speedway 2 years after Jim gave me that stuff. And he got to see it, but he passed on not long afterward. Well, I've written 40 books, mostly regional books in that area. And this is still to this day my bestseller. And I still get new photographs. People send me so much information on this, the old board tracks, but this was one of 23 or 24 board tracks in America.
So tell us, for those not familiar with board track racing, what is it?
Well, in the early 1900s, our roads in America were just mud holes, and they weren't like Europe. Europe, they were having street races, and here you couldn't really do much of that. But so a fellow named Jack Prince, he was a bicycle racer, and most of these fellas started with bicycles, like Louis Chevrolet, was bicycle mechanic brought over here for that reason. And Jack Prince had built some quarter mile circle tracks for bicycles. And most of them were in the Midwest. And then as, you know, Henry Ford and these fellows started developing vehicles, the tracks got bigger and they were, you know, racing motorcycles. And then they were just throwing a motor on a hunk of metal and a couple wheels. I mean, they really raced about anything, but they became really famous because they could bank them. The curves were banked so steeply that they were setting speed records and really, really being able to develop cars from everything they did. The Duesenberg brothers, the Chevrolet brothers, Barney Oldfield, all these fellas. So the board tracks followed what they used to call hill climbs. So in my neck of the woods, they had Summit Mountain hill climbs on this 3-mile steep mountain. And they had them for 3 years, 1913 to 15, and then they outlawed them. But by the third year, famous people were coming. And when the PennDOT outlawed the road racing there, this was coal and steel country, and there was a lot of money. It was like Uniontown was the richest town in America at this time. There were so many millionaires, and the homes are just amazing in that town from this. So they threw all their money together and brought in some big shots from Hollywood and places like that, and they threw this track up in 2 months' time. It was a mile and an eighth oval, 34-degree banked curves. It was very dangerous.
And you mentioned that it was extremely dangerous in the days of the board track races, particularly at Uniontown, the inaugural event, which was on December 2nd, 1916, it was an especially bloody event, even by today's standards. So what were some of the things that made that racetrack in particular so dangerous?
Well, it was those curves. They started calling one of the curves on the Uniontown Speedway Death's Curve after this race. So it was the preliminary race, and there were just thousands of people in the stands. It was the biggest thing. The farmers were all on their tractors out in the fields. People walked. That came any way they possibly could. And there was one of the race car drivers that was friends with a local coal baron was married to a silent film star. Her name was Vivian Prescott from Philadelphia. And she did like over 101, 102 silent films. Well, they came to the third hill climb, and then they invested in the track, and they brought in Universal Films president Carl Laemmle. And he invested big money. He had a 3-foot-tall solid silver Universal Film trophy crafted. It took longer to craft that trophy than it did to build the track. And it was worth $3,000 in 1916 and $5,000 in 1922 when they closed the track. But they handed it down. They had an annual Universal Film trophy race, 200-mile race, and they handed it down to the winner each year. So that first race, Louis Chevrolet won that trophy. But the Hoskins team out of Chicago, Hughes, what was his name? I forget his first name. Hughes was a really famous English driver, and he came from London and joined the Hoskins team. But he and a team member, his own team member, they backed into each other on Death's Curve, and Hughes went spinning out into the infield, and George Titlow went and pulled him out of his car, and everyone's clapping. Yay, he was safe. They walked up to the press stand where all the rich guys were, and the same guy ran over his teammate and rammed into the press stand. There were 3 floors, 100 people, and it collapsed. There were 5 people dead, 17 injured. I mean, they locked the place down. they made, Universal Films was filming the races, and they made them stop until they got the bodies out of there and everything. And well, the Hoskins sponsor never raced again. But 6 months later, they had the grand opening and a new press stand. And Barney Oldfield brought the first race car with the roof for safety measures.
You had mentioned a little bit about the connection between the board track racing and the early days of Hollywood. Were there other things that you wanted to tell us about that connection?
Well, yes. Well, everyone's heard of Henry Ford and Thomas Edison, and they were buddies because Henry Ford originally worked for Thomas Edison, but Edison fired him because he wouldn't stop designing cars, wasn't doing his own work. But then they became partners, but they were friends with Carl Laemmle, who was also out of the Midwest until he, in 1916 is the year he bought the chicken farm in Hollywood and built Universal Films. It's the same year he had the trophy crafted, and he was at the races in Uniontown, Podunk, Pennsylvania. So a funny story about Edison, Ford, and Laemmle is at the grand opening of Universal Films, Edison and Ford were on their way because they were speaking, you know, they were guests of honor. You know, Carl Laemmle was there at every race and handed that trophy to the winner every year. They called him Uncle Carl. Yeah.
So you write about the Speed King. This was a person, Charlie Johnson. What made him so fascinating?
You know, it's hard to find out information about their personalities and everything when the story's over 100 years old now. But I dug and dug and dug and interviewed and interviewed and interviewed. And finally, this guy that was almost 100 years old called me maybe a decade ago. He's gone now. I was in Florida. It was winter. And he called me out of the blue and said, honey, I talked to Charlie Johnson one time. His name was Jim Campbell. He was a fabulous old fellow. And I visited him many times after this, but he actually had a conversation with Charlie. Thing was, Charlie was just a poor coal miner's kid. I told you there were so many rich people around him. And he was just a dirty little street kid, really. But he started racing bicycles and caught the attention of George Titlow, who was a coal baron hotel baron, and he started the first hill climb. Well, he took Charlie Johnson under his wing when he saw what he was doing, and he put him in his first race car and sent him up that mountain. And the third year of the race, Charlie, who'd never left Uniontown in his life, this is when guys were coming in from the Indianapolis 500. They just raced in Indianapolis, all these famous guys, and Ralph De Palma from Italy won in Indianapolis. He came to Uniontown, and Charlie Johnson beat him by like 17 seconds or something. And that catapulted Charlie. His name is, he was famous now, and he was just a little urchin. I mean, he worked in the coal mines when he's a little boy. So he was, his head kind of grew and grew. And George Titlow continued to back him up. But he made a lot of money on that race. And he fell out with George Titlow over some of the rules. And he himself went to a bunch of coal barons and collected $100,000 and called Jack Prince, who he knew from some of these bicycle races, and invited him to Uniontown to see if they could find property to build a board track. He was just on a roll. So George Titlow had to back him, and so did everyone else, because this was enormous. And like I said, some of the people at that race, Vivian Prescott and her husband, were at that race. I have pictures of them sitting on top of a telephone pole. The lights, they're sitting on the brace that is on the top that goes across, sitting up there in her little dress and her umbrella. I mean, it's beautiful. But she raced in Ormond Beach. But so Charlie, it was so interesting to me because there were rumors that he had, after 7 years of fame, he ran off to Cuba with the money from the track. So I was curiouser and curiouser because I kept getting conflicting reports. He did, he didn't, he, you know, yada, yada. But then, of course, some of his relatives called out of the blue. I can't remember her name, Wilma, I believe it was. But she said, honey, I was 7 years old when Uncle Charlie came back from Cuba. And yes, he talked about taking the money and being in hiding. And he came back with a wife and two little chihuahuas. And so I had to dig up this story. And he did come back and he started a brewery, paid his workers in scrip. You know what scrip is? Pieces of paper that you spend at the country store that are worthless, including this girl's dad. And he took off with the money, bought himself a new Packard, took off with the money, went to Oklahoma and struck oil. Charlie Johnson. How interesting. I mean, he just lands on his feet no matter what. So I dug and dug around until I thought I had enough for a really cool feature film. I mean, people kept asking me, you know, we should do a documentary. And I never did do a documentary. I just kept writing books because that's, you know, I'm an author. But then I decided I had to learn screenwriting because people need to know about this. It's just so exciting to me.
Yeah, it is a fascinating story. And honestly, I didn't know much about this history of motorsports. So it was very interesting to learn about this aspect of history that I knew nothing about. But thanks to you, now I know quite a bit about it.
They were proving grounds. It was a real proving ground. I mean, the Duesenberg team set in 1920, they set 52 AAA records that held until the 1960s. So they were real proving grounds for vehicles, and they kept improving them. And the mechanics would become drivers. And the last race, 1922, Tommy Milton was a famous driver, and his mechanic became a driver and won the last race. But they were proteges of Barney Oldfield. So yeah, I think they deserve credit. You're driving around in a car today, it's because of these men risking their lives. And many died, and many were maimed. And Tommy Milton, who won the Indy 500 and won the Universal Trophy Cup twice, he was blind. He was legally blind. And his car, he hit a barrier and his car exploded and caught fire, and he got burnt in Uniontown, spent 2 months in the hospital. And he actually committed suicide 40 years later because of the pain he was still in from those burns.
Wow, that's a sad story.
It is. They really, these men were so brave and so crazy and talented, and they were gentlemen. They were always in suits and ties.
You've said your screenplay, Speed King, is Ford versus Ferrari meets Titanic. Would you tell us more about the script and where you are in the process with writing and marketing it?
Yes, I do have a sales agent who has a producer who pitched it to Netflix, and they've been looking at it for a while, and I think they're interested in a miniseries, but I'm waiting. It's been years and years, you know. And I knew nothing about screenwriting. In 2012, I went to Hollywood, and do you know who Gary Shusitz was?
Yes.
Okay. I went to his last gathering. He died 4 months later. Well, he loved Speed King. He said, "You don't have to be a screenwriter. I'll write it with you." And then he died. And he called me after I came home. You know, I pitched it to 18 people. After I came home, I said, "Look, I own the rights to several historical legends, you know, including Speed King." And he said, "Send me a list of them. I have a history producer that's interested and has money." And I'm like, "Okay." So I sent him, and then he died. And this is the way this goes. So now, 9 years later, I've rewritten it 10 times, more than that, because I hooked up with Screenwriting U, became a screenwriter. Now I feel like I kind of know what I'm doing. And I was never afraid to talk to people. And when I was in Hollywood, I thought, oh my gosh, these people are just like me. These producers are, you know, I've been self-employed all my life. And I've never met so many people like me in my life, because I was raised in the mountains and I was it for that. I didn't really have peers. It was so exciting to be around peers.
And people who are interested in story and bringing stories to the public, and particularly true life stories, are very, very popular.
Yes. I'm hoping and praying. I chant to the full moon, "Speed King, Speed King," all the time.
So have you adapted it then to a miniseries as well?
Not yet. Right now it is a feature, and but I have plenty of information to adapt it to a miniseries. And that is in my pitch. I'll do it in a heartbeat. Just say the word. I'll start adapting, or I'll help somebody adapt. You know, I'll consult with your choice. I don't care. I want the story out there. At this point, it's a monkey on my back, and I want it shown to people. It's mighty exciting.
It is very exciting, and I think a lot of people would enjoy this type of story.
I hope so. Please.
What other projects are you currently working on?
Well, I just finished about the third draft of a comedy. It's a haunted Christmas rom-com, and it was so much fun because I wrote a true story over the winter that is a very emotional drama, and I really needed to write something funny. So it's called Funeral Friends, and it's about a biracial girl whose single mother brought her up, saying she never had it, and that her dad was a soldier who died, which was a lie because he was a skinny little nerdy white guy that owned a funeral home, and she just didn't want to admit it. And she becomes a comedian, and Kitty does, the girl. And one day when she's in a comedy club doing her bit, this lawyer comes in and says, You've inherited the Brinks funeral home and a house and a pile of money. She said, I'm the comedian around here. But my dad's dead. He was a soldier. He said, no, he died last week of an aneurysm. He lived, 20 miles away. So the place is haunted. And, it opens up with her as a little girl writing to Santa, wanting her dad for Christmas. And then in the end, she gets her dad for Christmas, but he's a ghost.
That sounds like a really fun story. And it's a lot different than Speed Kings, for sure.
It's so different, yes. So just having fun with it, And I don't have a manager, but I've been talking to a manager who's interested in my work. She gave me a list of things that the producers she deals with are interested in. And she said there are not enough. There's no diversity in the Christmas movies. And they're dying for it. So tons of diversity and fun. Yeah.
Is there anything else you'd like to tell us about you or your work?
Well, I started writing when I was 6 and was acting out my stories in front of the class. Was very obnoxious. And I just could never, I don't know what else I would have done. If somebody made me work in a factory, they would have had to kill me. I wouldn't have done it. I would have starved to death. I would have left because I can't do anything but write. I have to write. So it was just the natural thing for me to do. My parents didn't want me to write. It was a big fight. I ran away from home when I was 17. I'm like, I'm right. I don't know what you want me to do. I can't, I'm not flipping burgers. I'm writing. That's it. I left and I've been writing. And I just started my own company and gambled on myself. I wrote a poetry book. I wrote a natural remedies booklet, a deer hunting guide, anything that I thought people would buy. Tourist guides, haunted book.
Yeah. Over the years, you've been quite prolific. As you said, you have over 40 books that you've written and published, which is fantastic.
Thank you. It's been fun. Trying sometimes.
Please tell our listeners where they can find out more about you and where they can find your books.
Well, I am on Amazon, Marcy McGinnis. If you just look up Uniontown Speedway, you'll find the page with all of my 30 books. I have a website, ohiopyle.info, which is the name of the little tourist town, Ohio, P-Y-L-E, one word. And there's a Uniontown Speedway Facebook page also where I put up a lot of things, like Barney Oldfield. I just put up a replica of Barney Oldfield's Golden Submarine, the first race car with the roof, because I got to visit it a couple months ago in Florida. And I was just very excited about that. But yes, Amazon. I'm on Amazon. Marcy McGinnis, Uniontown Speedway. I'm pretty easy to find. If you type in Uniontown Speedway, you're not going to get anyone else. There I will be, just, chanting Speed King.
And your website has quite a lot of information and a lot of good photographs. So I highly recommend that people visit your website.
Thank you. I have hundreds of photographs from the hill climbs and the speedway, and people keep sending them. There's always something new. People die, their kids find these photographs and they land on me. They're like, here, take them.
And that's how you became the foremost expert on this topic.
That is. Thank you very much. Yes.
It was great to have you on the show, Marcy. Thank you so much for taking time to be a guest on the Curious Professor podcast.
Thank you, Karen. It's wonderful. I really appreciate it.
And now for the answer to this episode's trivia question. What is a velodrome? A velodrome is an arena featuring a steeply banked oval track for bicycle races. Board tracks for motor racing were based on the same technology as European velodromes. We'll end the show with something punny. What type of race car does a dog drive? A Ferrari. Thank you for joining me for this episode of the Curious Professor podcast. If there's a person, place, artifact, or natural wonder that has sparked your curiosity and you'd like for me to feature it on the show, please let me know. My website is thecuriousprofessorpodcast.com. If you enjoyed the show, be sure to subscribe to the Curious Professor podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you'd like to become part of my community of curiosity seekers, be sure to visit my website, thecuriousprofessorpodcast.com, and join Dr. B's Hive. Until next time, always be learning and be curious with Dr. B.